you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey everybody, welcome to Life Hacker. This is the Ask Life Hacker podcast for June 25th. With me is Adam Dotchess.
Hello.
Whitson Gordon. We're going to be joined in a little bit by Alan Henry. I am Adam Pash. As always, we've got some news to discuss. We're going to answer some questions and we'll deliver a few downloads at the end of the show. So without further ado, let's talk about the news. So last week was a big week for Microsoft. There was the Windows Phone 8 announcement. There was the Surface. So Surface is probably more interesting, which means let's start off with Windows 8. Just get that Windows Phone 8. Let's get that out of the way.
All right. Windows Phone 8 is essentially the next version of Windows Phone, jumping up from Windows Phone 7. It's got kind of a couple of new features. They've switched to Nokia Maps instead of Bing Maps, which, you know, seems just kind of like a brand war at first, but it's got, I think the new one has offline maps, turn-by-turn navigation, kind of the 3D view that we just saw from Apple. So the Maps app is going to be severely beefed up, which is cool. It's, you know, one of the things everyone's looking for in a smartphone now. I think they've got kind of like a new start screen with, you know, customizable settings and live tiles and stuff like that. It's just like the next iteration of Windows Phone.
Yeah.
The really interesting part is that Windows, if you have a Windows phone now, even if you have the new Lumia phone that has been so hyped up, you won't be able to upgrade to Windows Phone 8. You will get Windows Phone 7.8, which has some of its features, but you will not, no one will be able to upgrade to Windows Phone 8 until the fall when those phones comes out.
Is that interesting or horrible?
I think, well, maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah.
If I would be pretty ticked if I just bought a Lumia with them talking about how that's like the next generation of Windows Phone,
yeah,
and then it not at all being the next generation of Windows Phone. I'd be pretty ticked.
Why does Microsoft do it this way, though? I mean, why not? It seems silly to make the hardware obsolete that quickly and not allow upgrades. I mean, Apple with iOS 6, I thought that was annoying, but this sounds much worse.
I think it's a matter of Microsoft trying to play catch up. I think, you know, they're in this position where they're pretty far behind. Not even like, without any fanboyism going into it, just by like numbers, they're clearly far behind.
Oh, yeah.
Like Windows Phone 8, it's great. People really like it. I'm sorry, Windows Phone 7. People really like it. It's really nice. Everyone who uses it likes it. No one uses it still. Mm-hmm. Like it's still,
it's just not popular.
And like, I think that there's a certain amount of like,
start over with a clean slate.
We have to do what's going to work, and this isn't working. We need to start fresh, and we're going to make some sacrifices to do that.
That's the way they can put all their energy into these new phones and new OS and not have to worry about supporting the old stuff. And maybe if, like, fingers crossed, they avoid the fragmentation problem down the road by starting with a clean slate.
So speaking of playing catch-up, though, Microsoft Surface. That's what it's all about. Microsoft Surface, if you didn't see last week, is the new tablet, sort of ultrabook hybrid. It's mostly a tablet. I mean, it's a tablet that has, if you've seen Apple's Smart Cover, that nice little magnetic thing that covers it, it's like that. It's got something like that, but a cool, potentially, no one's seen it really work in action, but a cool keyboard. So it's basically sort of a hybrid between a tablet and a laptop of sorts.
My question about the keyboard, does anyone know how it works? How it actually knows you're touching it and what you're doing with it?
I actually think that there are two different keyboards from what I've read. One that's more of like a touch sensitive and one that's got more like hardware feedback.
Mm-hmm.
It's But it's no one got to use it on the hands-on, yeah. So no one really has any anything useful to
which
say.
Which is
about
why all of
the
speculation about whether it's going to be an iPad killer or whatever seems really dumb, because no one has used it. Like, yeah. Let's wait.
I mean,
we'll see. It looks awesome in theory.
Yeah. Mm. There's a lot of criticism, not criticism, but like skepticism pointed toward Microsoft at it, because they had a big event, they announced a lot, and you know, a lot of big talk, and people are excited about it for a good reason. Mm-hmm. It looks cool. Like, in theory, it looks cool.
Looks
but
great.
Since no one's used it, it's tough to really give any sort of useful opinion on it. Mm-hmm. However, a couple of things that we can also tell you about it from this event. There are two different sort of forms, and they're separated by both hardware and software, correct? Mm-hmm. So there's, like, there's the ARM.
Right.
Windows.
That runs Windows 8 RT.
Surface RT or something like that. And then there's the Surface for Windows 8, which runs an Intel. Is that correct? What's the processor?
I think it's a Core. Okay. I don't remember exactly, but I remember it being faster than I thought.
And it's gonna run a more like a full fledged Windows 8, correct?
Okay.
Is that correct?
That sounds right to me.
It's something like that. There's a split in both, and people are also concerned about that because it is like slightly confusing, where it's like there's this Windows 8 RT, which is sort of like a stripped down version of Windows 8, and then there's like the full-on Windows 8, and then they're separated by hardware, but they actually look exactly
the
same.
But I kind of like that. It's confusing,
or they don't look exactly
until you walk into the store and then someone explains to you that if you want a tablet for just reading stuff and kind of like kicking back on the couch, get this ARM version. It's gonna be really easy to use. It's gonna be just tablet stuff. Yeah. And then if you want something that you can maybe also kind of work on and kind of use this keyboard, like get some of your full Windows apps, this is gonna be one of the.
I don't think it's gonna cause a lot of confusion.
No,
Apple has Mac OS X, and they have. I'm sorry, OS X. It's no longer Mac OS X. I need to remember that. OS X, and they have iOS, and it doesn't confuse people that much. Maybe the larger
very
confusion.
Different hardware. Yeah.
The larger confusion might be that there's a larger hardware split, and there's a larger like software split. Like the operating system looks distinctly different on iOS OS X, whereas with the Windows 8 RT versus whatever.
I don't think there'll be any confusion. I'm curious. I'm like in my head, the tablet, the RT version is probably going to be a great tablet as long as they can get all that right. Whereas I feel like it's going to be a lot harder to make it the higher end tablet better.
Yeah.
With if it's got a nice processor and everything, that's fine. But how is the full Windows? If you're on a Windows desktop, what's that experience going to be like on that tablet?
Yeah.
If you aren't necessarily using like a mouse, I think that's going to be a little bit harder. And I think people may say, "Oh yeah, sure, I want to type stuff up. I'll get this one," and then be like, "This sucks."
One other small interesting thing worth noting is, or not small actually, it's pretty significant, is that Microsoft is making these Surface tablets, which is an about face of like 30 some years of computing, where Microsoft makes the software and then these OEM manufacturers make the hardware that it runs on. And so this is Microsoft basically taking another step in like Apple's direction, where they're doing the entire package from hardware straight through to software, which is also potentially very promising. The times that Microsoft has done this successfully include the Xbox, which is wildly successful.
Yeah.
But
I think I think with the Xbox that when they did that, that was a one unit thing. That was really Apple like, because that was something that you just buy from Microsoft and it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like with a lot of the stuff they've done. Really everything they've done outside of the Xbox, and still here with that fragmentation with the different kinds of hardware and the operating system functioning on tablets, and it ends up being a really confusing thing. I'm like, I know you guys are saying that it's not, but or that it might not be, but it's more of an indecisive thing from Microsoft that concerns me. They always do this. They don't just pick something and go with it.
I think it's another matter of those catch up, and they are like sort of unifying the entire like metaphor for what it means to interact with things. Like the Xbox, when it boots up, the home screen or whatever it's called, it's tiled. Like it looks like the Windows 8 home screen, sort of. And I would assume that when Windows 8 comes out, the Xbox will probably have an update, and they will be very unified looking.
Mm-hmm.
The Xbox Live will probably be, in some sense, the store for Windows 8. Like, currently, Xbox Live, you can download videos, you can do Netflix stuff. Like, it has sort of those sorts of apps. You can buy, like, you can buy videos, like, episodes of shows or whatever. So there's a potential for, like, a very clean cross-platform or cross-device,
yes,
whatever, experience. Mm.
But they really need to get there, because they're saying they're so fragmented throughout all these different things. And I think the difference with what has succeeded for them is when they said, here's something, buy this, this is great. Mm-hmm. And that's what Apple does. And that's, I think, like, the Microsoft Surface tablet, I think if you handed it over to Apple and they did their thing, mm-hmm, they could sell that. It's really a lot better than, the smart cover keyboard thing is, if I were Apple, I would be like, yeah, should have thought of that.
Yeah.
But Microsoft is, instead of saying, here's this awesome thing that you should buy, they're saying, here are all your different options, choose something. And I think the choice is the problem. It's not that it will be confusing or not, I guess.
But here's the thing. I think they're learning from both Apple and Google's mistakes and strengths with this. Mm-hmm. They're making the hardware themselves. So unlike, you know, Android, where you have all this fragmentation, or Windows, you know, Windows 7, mm-hmm, where you have all these different manufacturers doing stuff and putting their own OEM crap on it, they're making it all themselves. They're you know, these are like the Google Nexus phones of, mm-hmm, Windows 8. They're doing it all themselves. And while there are two different devices, they're still both made by Microsoft. And they're still both, and they're taking, you know, when the iPad came out, people are like, well, it's kind of one device that's trying to do everything, and maybe it kind of can in certain ways, but it doesn't really for most, mm-hmm, people. Microsoft is saying, look, we're going to take what Apple did well, we're going to make it ourselves, we're not going to have this OEM fragmentation crap, but we're not going to copy them, you know, we're not just going to be a carbon copy of them, we think that this is the best way for this to be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we think that this is a good device for some people, and this is a good device for other people, and we're not going to try and put everyone on the same device and say, this is good for all of you, because that's not necessarily true.
It's not, but I think that's what's worked for Apple. But I do hope that it works out for Microsoft. It seems like they've done some really cool things.
I think the other thing with it as being like the tablet middle ground is that it is something where I can't imagine ever using the iPad as my only computer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I can imagine it with the Surface.
I can imagine other people potentially doing it.
Like this, but the Surface is like sort of getting closer to that middle, mm-hmm, ground where you could imagine using it as like your only computer. Because,
yeah,
again, this is having never used it, but just like, yeah, sort of speculating. The other thing that's interesting is, and this sort of comes on the heels of Apple's hardware refresh that they just did with the Airs and the, mm-hmm, Retina, whatever, MacBook Pro. It's interesting because I like actually the way that the Mac hardware ecosystem is right now, where you can get these wonderful laptops. They're like beautifully designed, beautifully made. But Adam just did a post last week about building like the Hack Pro that Apple isn't, because they're not updating it until 2013. They're going to, yeah, update it. And that's like, and even, They did an update, and it was basically like 2-year-old processors.
Yeah.
So that's not, you know, a considerable update. Mm. But it's really cool that, like, I actually like that with the state of like Hackintosh. It's like, if I want a laptop, I buy one of their very well-made laptops. Mm. If I want like a bigger machine, I'll just build it.
Yeah.
And like, I wonder if that's the direction it's going to go with things like Windows, where they're going to start, you know, building their hardware, and it will be like the things that construction and like what like portability and stuff like that matter most, they're gonna have like all of this control and make it like really great hardware. And then it's like, but if you want a desktop, go nuts. There,
well,
are all these,
that would
desktops.
Be really, keep in mind, nice, keep in mind that they've already done this with laptops, or they're already starting to do this with laptops, with, I think it's called Microsoft Signature, where they're taking some of the best laptops out there and they're putting Windows on it without any of the installed bloatware, and you can take it into a Microsoft store or whatever, and they have full support for it. So they are kind of already starting to go in that direction. I don't think they've made any of the hardware themselves. I could be, mm-hmm, wrong on that, but this is definitely the direction they're going in. And so I think you're absolutely right. And I think they're taking what Apple's done well, but they're giving you a little bit more choice because they think that they can do that. You know, they think that's the right direction. And I agree. Well, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. But.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door.
Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, cool. So, talked a lot about Microsoft.
Yeah.
Let's go quickly through one other cool thing that we ran into last week. Ford, the car company, has created a Chrome extension in France.
That's very specific.
It's weird because they're an American car company.
And it's actually not currently available for download. It's sort of confusing. We're trying to find it. The link to their website where it's supposed to be does not currently resolve to an actual page. Anyway, it's called Ford Key Free. It's a Chrome extension. You take it, you install it in Chrome, and currently it works for Mac only, I believe, if it works. Again, it's not actually available for download. But you install it on there, and then you pair your smartphone with your computer and basically pair it with that extension and say, like, this is the key for my logins. Mm-hmm. When you walk away from your computer, you're logged out of your Google, Facebook, and Twitter accounts. When you walk back to your computer, it automatically, by detecting your Bluetooth proximity, logs you back into your Facebook, Google, and Twitter accounts. So it's basically just this sort of like cool proximity key for like easily logging in and out of a computer when you're at or away from a computer. It's a really cool idea. The video, which is on our post and which we'll show a little bit of on the screen while we're talking about it at this moment, is it looks really cool. And it's not the first time we've seen something like this. In 2007, I did this long post about this this app called, what was it called? Home Zone, that did proximity-based actions, like where you pair it with your phone and like when you got close, you could have it like turn your volume back up, and when you walked away, you could have it mute your volume or like lock your computer and stuff like that. It was super cool. It's not even available anymore, which is a bummer. But anyway, it's a really cool idea, and hopefully, actually, more realistically than say giving your credentials to Ford, who has very little interest in a web company
type
thing.
Why did they even do this?
This is really
confusing. They actually did it to promote their keyless entry thing. Okay. So they've got near field communication, NFC stuff built into like keys now. It worked because now we're talking about it. So you walk the car, it unlocks your car, you walk away.
And this is actually really clever of them, because if you think about it, if you look at where Ford has been going with a lot of their stuff with Ford Sync and some of the new developments that are coming to Ford Sync, this is the market that they're targeting. It's us. Mm. It's the geeks who are on their computers and love integrating their smartphone with stuff. And
it's very smart of them.
This was the perfect way to market us, I think. If it works.
I mean, I don't like cars. We've talked about I'm worried this is starting to sound like an ad. I don't like cars. The only thing that gets me interested in them at all is like when I find out that there's like a cool technological integration. So when there is some Ford Sync.
Let me tell you, so I have a Ford, and I'm telling you, if that's what interests you,
well, the rest of us,
these are the things you should check out.
Anyway, ideally though, this sort of thing maybe will provide inspiration for people like LastPass or 1Password, password managers, who sort of like can get this ball rolling in their managers as well. Gizmodo, I believe, was they were wagging their finger at Apple, like, Apple, you should have done this. I don't even think that really makes sense, but
Should have done this keyless.
Yeah, I mean, because you know it's a phone, so it's sort of like it would be a phone feature that could sort of integrate with the operating system.
Whenever someone comes out with something that Apple doesn't, Gizmodo decides to be like, not just Apple. Gizmodo.
It's a broad thing people do, but yeah, specific. I hear you. Okay, so anyway, that would be cool. So now Alan's going to jump in and tell us a little about his feature from last week, which was about how to determine if a controversial statement is scientifically true. Alan?
Thanks, guys. So every day people send us statements, whether they're shared on Facebook or their email forwards, where they come off like they're true, but we always have a feeling that there's something a little fishy about them, whether it's Pop Rocks and Coke will make your stomach explode, or doctors are being paid by Big Pharma to hold back the cure for cancer, or something like that. So I talked to Dr. Phil Plait, also known as the Bad Astronomer, and David McRaney, the author of the blog You Are Not So Smart, to come up with some really great tips for anybody to be able to tell whether or not one of these statements that they find is scientifically true. And the first step, obviously, is to get rid of your confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is that natural trend we all have to prove that what we believe is already true. So when you start doing research into a statement, think about what your position is, and then try just as hard to refute your perspective as you're trying to find the truth in whatever it is that's being told to you. So once you do that, once you come at it from a very objective perspective, you can really get to the bottom of it instead of trying to come up with whatever you believe and finding proof to support whatever your stance is. The next thing you can do is start looking at some popular websites like Snopes.com or Wikipedia and Phys.org, some of these sites that have a dedication to science and have a dedication to skepticism, and most importantly, they cite their sources when they say something. So if Snopes says something's not true, at least that they have links that you can click on for further reading. The next thing you can do is start looking for peer-reviewed studies. They're not too hard to find. You can use Google Scholar, or you can just do Google searches. Lots of sites give them out for free. And when you read the studies, you can tell the difference between the reporting on the next cure for cancer versus how far along in clinical studies that cure really is. And then after that, you can always go to your public library. Don't forget reference librarians. They're a huge help, and they're willing to do a lot of research on your behalf to get down to the truth of the matter, and then you can wade through the information that they present to you. So it's a really important topic. I think that critical thinking is something that we all have a responsibility to practice more frequently, and I had the help of some really great people to come up with some really great tips to help you improve your critical thinking skills. So check out the post, and thanks very much.
Awesome. Thanks, Alan. That's it for the news. So let's jump on over to some questions. All right, our first question comes from Scott, who writes, "My sister, who's neither interested in tech nor inclined to become so, has an old laptop that will need to be replaced soon. I was wondering if you think that the non-geek crowd could use a tablet such as the Transformer Prime or the upcoming Windows Surface RT as a complete replacement for, not supplement to, a laptop PC. Note that I pointed out those two because they prominently feature a physical keyboard." Interesting question, considering we've just been blabbing about this for the past 10 minutes. What do you guys think?
That's... Okay, here are my hopefully brief thoughts on the matter. A lot of people have been talking about how you could use, in theory, the iPad as your only PC, or at least your only laptop. I worry about this, even with a physical keyboard, I worry about this because there are a lot of things that you don't realize until you actually try to use it as your regular PC. You don't, you know, you can't use USB flash drives. You can't, you know, you don't have just a regular system.
You can with Android. I don't know about the, I'm assuming Windows too, but with the Transformer, you can totally plug stuff
in. It's just a little bit, I think for people who are so used to the regular desktop, and arguably a lot of people are saying that the regular, like, dichotomy, the file system that we're used to and the way we manage it needs to go away, and maybe that's true. But I think that it may take a lot of getting used to for someone to jump on that. Maybe, like, the Microsoft Surface with the full desktop, just so people can go to that if they're more comfortable. I also, well, I guess this that only really applies to the iPad. You would have to, like, sync it with iTunes for certain things. It just seems like it'd take a little bit more work to get used to it.
It depends what you're doing, and yeah, that's true. But when when I had the Transformer, the original one, when you put it into the dock, it really felt like a netbook. There were some things that were a little weird, yeah. But
counterpoint also to Whitson, not to you.
Yes.
He's talking about someone who's not tech inclined and has no interest in doing so, which I'm going to assume means someone who reads the internet, uses Facebook, and probably, like, sends and receives email. If, I mean, you know, there's always those sort of bridges. If the person has to work with Microsoft Word...
And still do it.
Oh, yeah. But it's like, how is... I guess I haven't done that. What's, like, the state of working with Word documents and that sort of thing on, like, Android?
Well, if you're on Android, I mean, you can just do it in Google Docs. And as someone who used to use desktop... For someone who hates web apps... Google Docs is probably my favorite thing.
Oh, I love Google Docs. I just, because sometimes there's still difficulty. Like, you can say use Google Docs, but some people have to use Microsoft Word. Like, and you have to use that sort of, I'm just saying.
Well, there's that thing you can do if you have to use Microsoft Word, and I'm guessing that there's not, like, if you have to use Microsoft Word, you're probably, that's more of a work thing. But if you did have to do that, there's that thing, I think Alan posted about it a couple months ago, where there's some, like, over service. The web. Yeah. That works.
Yeah, and there are a lot of workarounds. I guess I'm just saying that, like, if that specifically, because she's also not tech inclined, maybe not interested in learning, like, a convoluted way to do something that's not just, like, using Microsoft Word. I guess is sort of what
that's,
I think.
That's kind of my argument, is that I think there's kind of two sides to it. And one side is, yes, a lot of less tech inclined people are just going to be using email and Facebook and stuff like that. But for some of the little stuff, like trying to find a file that they just downloaded, the less tech inclined people at least mostly already know how to do that on a regular computer, and to try and figure it out on a completely new system is going to be really frustrating.
It can be frustrating.
We are the kind of people who would make those workarounds in order to make this our number one device. I don't think they're there for the less tech inclined people yet.
Well,
but that's my opinion.
I feel like the answer to this is make a list of the stuff you're going to do on the thing, see if those things are available.
Yeah.
Then buy it with a good return policy and take it back if it's.
That's really what it is. Find somewhere with a good return policy, you're golden.
So our next question comes from a caller.
Hey, Lifehacker. I always wanted to get into web design, but I never knew really where to start. Do you guys have any ideas of where to start, you know, websites and such, or, you know, links? Anyways, love the show.
Links. We've got your links.
Yeah. I can probably answer this one pretty quickly. There's actually a weekend hacker I did with a roundup of a whole bunch of links, so we'll share that in the show notes, put that on the screen. So there's a lot to go to there. And then I also had a post on intro to typography and layout, which would probably be a good read to just go through and get some basics down. But if, you know, I mean, for people who want to learn more, I usually refer people to Lynda because they have a lot of good online lessons. I've never actually used it for design, but it's been very good for programming. So I assume that the other lessons are up to the same quality.
I mean, I know that they have, like, CSS lessons and stuff like that, which is how you style web pages. It's a good resource. It's a good starting point. We've talked a little bit about, we have our
night school.
Our night school that's sort of about how to build and design just, like, a very basic website. Because basically, there are a few core concepts you need to understand, and then it just becomes a matter of, like, fleshing out your knowledge in specifically what you want to learn about. So, you know, you've got to understand HTML, you've got to understand CSS. Those are the two very broad things, and then from there, since you're more interested in design, then you're going to sort of, like, focus in on specific things, like more deep knowledge about CSS and, you know, design principles and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would say for, like, the more artistic side of it, and, like, we have plenty on the technical stuff, and so does Lynda, and I would say for, like, the more artistic side of it, it would help a lot to follow some design blogs or people on Twitter that, you know, that are designers that you like, and see what they're doing and see what they're using.
I really like a website called CSS Tricks. It's run by a guy named Chris Coyer? I'm not sure how you say his last name. Sorry, Chris. You're probably not listening, but in case you are. That is sort of like, it's a little bit more of like the geeky life hacker style, specifically related to CSS, which is like the geekier end of web design. But anyway, that's a just small, short call out link that's probably not in the other list of links. anyway, we've got links for you. Show notes, etc. Our next question comes from a reader who says, I have an older HDTV that has no HDMI ports. It has S-Video component and composite ports, and I was wondering how I could connect an Apple TV or Google TV box which only have HDMI to this TV. Is there any cheap solution, or do I have to just buy a new TV? No, you do not have to buy a new TV. So whenever presented with a problem of, I want to connect this thing to that, but they aren't the same.
Ends don't match.
We like to go to a little website called Monoprice. Monoprice is a dedicated, like, it's basically the Amazon of cords. So it's all cords, it's all connectors, all adapters. It's Monoprice. It's generally very cheap compared to the same cords that you can buy elsewhere. And so we checked out Monoprice and we did a quick search for HDMI 2 component.
And now, did he ask for HDMI to component or composite?
He said component, composite. Anyway,
so component is going to be your component is going to be your HD input. Composite is not HD, right. So you should go component.
Component. So there is an adapter, HDMI 2 component, with a stereo audio converter as well. That is $38.
Oh yeah,
for one.
That's really confusing.
So it's not super cheap. However, it is considerably cheaper than buying a new TV.
Yes.
So there you go.
The manufacturers of TVs will be very upset with us.
All right, so that's easy enough.
Yeah,
great.
Monoprice, always easy enough.
So.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Done with questions, let's move on to a quick show and tell.
Whitson, where are your glasses?
They're right. I don't wear glasses like these two guys, but...
Mine are real.
As someone who sits at a computer all day long, even when I'm not working, I'm sitting and staring at a computer.
It's a healthy disposition. So bad.
I know. But so I get headaches sometimes, and my eyeballs will start to hurt, and it just gets really frustrating. And I know I should probably pull myself away from the computer, but sometimes I can't. And that's where these glasses from Gunner Optics come in handy. They have a number of different styles. These ones look a little silly. On me.
No.
But I don't particularly care because I wear them when people aren't around.
It looks like you're going way a lot faster when you're wearing
it. It kind of looks like I'm a 90s snowboarder, yeah. Actually. They have a yellow tint to them, which keeps some of the blue light from getting in your eyes, which is kind of what can hurt your eyes, and especially if you're looking at the computer at night, like kind of cause insomnia. And they have a slight magnification, so it's much easier to read the screen without getting right up close to it. And this is the other claim, which I find maybe slightly dubious, but we'll see. They're kind of a little bit more contoured to your face. And the idea is to kind of keep the moisture near your eyes, because a lot of us, when we look at a computer, we don't blink enough. And your eyes dry out, and that's one of the reasons you start having eye pain when you're looking at a computer.
Yeah, I'm dubious of that, too.
Yes, I am dubious, but regardless... I know that I've been wearing these for about a month or two now, and they are phenomenal. I have not gotten any headaches or eye pain unless I stop using them, like when I'm out and I'm reading my iPad for a few hours. They're fantastic. They come in two styles. One that kind of looks a little bit more like normal glasses with just a yellow tint. And then the gamer glasses, which is what I have, not because I'm any kind of hardcore gamer because I want to look like a 90s snowboarder, but because the gamer ones have a much flatter edge to the earpieces, which is great, designed for if you're wearing a headset like most gamers do. And because all of my neighbors have been complaining about the noise from my apartment, I wear headphones all the time, and so I got the glasses that are a little bit more designed for wearing headphones all day.
Has that ever not happened to you?
Nope.
Are these the same ones that Jason wrote about?
Yes, Jason Chen wrote about these a little while ago, which is why I haven't written them up again. But I did buy them after I saw a couple other reviews from him. Everyone who has bought them
loves them,
and now I understand why. I kind of thought they were crazy until I wore them for a few weeks, and I'm in love, you guys.
Whoa, okay.
But here's my recommendation. If you can find them in a store, especially a store where you can try them on, do that, because they all fit a little differently. These ones can be a little bit uncomfortable on my ears, but again, I bought them because they are better for headphones. Gunner actually has a pretty good return policy too, so again, buy them from a store with a good return policy. Try them. Try maybe a couple pairs. If you don't like them, you can return them. But I definitely recommend them if you're one of those people that gets headaches and stuff from looking at screens all day.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to some downloads.
First up, we've got Do for Windows and OS X, and what it is basically a document syncer, but it goes into your email or it goes into your actual computer or whatever you give it access to, basically, and will find all your documents and organize them and keep them and kind of give you a lot of different metadata so you can find them in different ways. It'll organize them by people, by place, all sorts of things, and it will sync them across all your computers. They've also got iOS and Android apps in the queue, so eventually those will be available and you'll be able to get your documents very easily and find them very easily on pretty much anything.
TorChat is a free chat application for Windows and OS X. It is an anonymous chat app that works with the Tor proxy network, which basically routes your connections through a number of proxy servers across the world. The idea being you can have conversations with people over IM that are private and untraceable.
Last week, Waze had a pretty cool update, and Waze is our favorite turn-by-turn navigation app for iOS and Android, and the update comes to both, and now what it will do is it has a feature called Waypoints, and they also added something neat to the Waypoints, which I'll get to in a second, but the Waypoints lets you put things along the trip. Like if you decided I need to stop at a friend's house on the way to Disneyland, you could set a waypoint for that friend's house. But what it will also do is if you're running out of gas, it will help you find the closest and cheapest gas station along the way, and you can set that as a waypoint, which is really nice because it can save you some money. And on top of that, they have coupons with certain gas stations they have deals with, so they can give you exclusive coupons to those gas stations. So it's definitely a cool update. Waze is already free. Go ahead and download it if you want to give it a shot.
Last up is Stitcher, which is a radio app for Android and iOS. It's actually been around for a while, but we just discovered it. It's essentially the Pandora Radio of podcasts. You open up the app and you tell it what your interests are, and it will formulate a custom radio station, sort of like a custom talk radio station with podcasts based on your interests. You can add podcasts you already know you like to your station. You can create different stations for different subjects like technology or politics, and it'll also recommend stations based on what you like, and then you can add those to your existing stations or thumbs up and thumbs down just like in Pandora. It's very cool, so if you're kind of a podcast junkie, definitely check it out.
All right, that is it for this week.
Already?
Did you have something? Yeah. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.
If you'd like to ask us a question, send an email to tips+asklhshow@lifehacker.com. Alternatively, leave us a message at 347-687-8109. Try to keep your questions to a few sentences or 30 seconds so we can keep the show moving quickly. And thanks for listening, watching, or however else you get this podcast from the internet to your brain. This episode was recorded in Los Angeles, California by the Lifehacker staff and edited into a more consumable form by Kyle J. Norris. We'd also like to thank all the people who contributed images to our podcast to help make it look extra nice.
A month or two now, and they are... I've been wearing these for a month or two now.
Stitcher.
Am I... Oh, sorry. Is it in the order that we have it on the screen?